Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone. Wellness, inspiration, support.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rewiring Your Life podcast. My name is Marcia Stone, and I will be your host today. My beautiful co-host, Erica Spiegelman, had another engagement, and so today it'll be just me and our wonderful guest. I can't wait to tell you all about him. But first, let me say that this Rewiring Your Life project has been so rewarding. We do a podcast and we provide tips, tools, and conversations on wellness, inspiration, and support. We have extraordinary guests who are changing the world through their expertise. We know that everyone is trying these days to live their best lives, and our goal is to help you accomplish that. So today, our guest, without further ado, is my very good friend, Ryan Kane. I can't wait for you all to meet him. He has done so many things just in the years that I've known him. I think I've known Ryan, he might correct me, 5 or 6 years-ish. But let me tell you, Ryan Kane is a vibrant member of the Nashville healthcare and business communities. He has demonstrated over the last 20 years of working hands-on in the healthcare industry in the service of those around him predominantly. A strong entrepreneurship professional and Nashville native, Ryan graduated with a Bachelor of Business Administration from the University of Mississippi. And Ryan currently acts as president of Spiro Group, president of the Behavioral Health Division of Hall of Fame Health, an affiliate of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and is also the executive director of Fund Recovery, which serves athletes, veterans, their families, and fans seeking assistance for mental health or addiction issues. There's so many other things, Ryan, on this list. You co-founded Music City Interventions. You co-founded Nashville Recovery Center. I mean, Ryan, do you sleep? That is my first question to you. Do you sleep, Ryan Kane?
I do sleep. I do, Marcia. And I sleep very hard, and I need my sleep. So, yeah. And you're right. We've known each other, I think, 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was just kind of adding it up in my mind. Well, Ryan, welcome to Rewiring Your Life. We've been talking about getting you on here for several months. So I'm so excited that you're here today.
Same here. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
So where do you want to start? Do you want to tell our listeners about Hall of Fame Health? Do you want to talk about sort of your background of getting into this, you know, sort of other-centered, helping, healthcare type of work? Maybe you start with that. Maybe, you know, what brought you to this type of work, to really devote yourself so majorly to this type of work?
Yeah, I think let's start there. I basically was a healthcare guy when I left Mississippi. I got into healthcare for my first job and did kind of the traditional acute kind of hospital healthcare services for the first, 16 years of my career, maybe 15. And it was great. You know, I loved working in hospitals. I loved what I did. Felt like it was giving back and, you know, helping people that were sick. And from my personal story standpoint, while I had that career, I was also in the throes of addiction, alcoholism, drug addiction, and, you know, kind of patched a life together, managing to kind of juggle all the balls in the air until I couldn't do it anymore. And April Fool's Day 2012 was the last day I've had a drug or
what a day to quit, right?
it was perfect. And so a couple years into my sobriety, I had sold a company that I'd owned in healthcare, and I had a non-compete. My best friend from growing up, Darren Hobbs, who you know very well.
Yes.
I've been doing interviews.
I got to get him on the podcast too.
You do. And so we kind of connected and I had a non-compete. I was sitting out and Darren had been doing interventions, and I thought, you know, this is pretty cool. I'd like to know more about it. So we ended up starting a company and, with the intention that Darren would run it and eventually I'd go back to my real job. And,
right.
little did I know that it became something, way bigger than either of us anticipated, almost overnight. We were just so busy, and that led into a series of other kind of behavioral health related businesses, sober living. And then we started the Nashville Recovery Center and Tennessee Recovery Clinic, and just kind of did that. And you know, it was a wonderful thing for me personally, because it combined what I was, you know, passionate about, which was recovery, with work, and being able to have all of that the same thing was just, it was so rewarding. And it's just opened up many, many opportunities for me, both like personal relationships, like you and I have, and other friends. And then of course, business, you know, it's just been, it's been magical.
So, you know, I was thinking, while you were speaking, you know, these days it just seems like, of course, I live in Austin, and so I know it's true for here. I think it's pretty true for Nashville too. It just seems like every day you hear about another treatment center opening or another sober living opening. And, you know, there's sort of two sides to that coin. While it's a great thing, you know, I always wonder, you know, what is the mission? You know, where did this come from? And so, you know, when I look at your experience and Darren's also with Music City Interventions and Nashville Recovery Center, I mean, it seems like you guys kind of, you know, just took off, like catapulted really quickly into, you know, one of the treatment centers that people sort of know and respect. And I'm just curious, from your perspective, like, what's the difference? You know, what's the difference between, you know, 10 people getting their LLCs to open a treatment center today versus probably the 1% that will actually make it and become sort of, you know, a known and trusted entity?
Yeah, they certainly are popping up left and right. And I think, you know, if I look at Darren and I's story with Nashville Recovery Center, it started and ended with authenticity. That, you know, we didn't go into this trying to copycat anything or enter what we thought was going to be a lucrative business. It came naturally to us. It every time we needed something, an answer, it appeared right in front of our eyes. And we just took the next right step and staying true to what he and I thought from day one, which was, what did we lack when we first got sober? What were the things that we wanted, right? Not what does the market have? Not what does, you know, what does the margin look like? It was not about that.
Right.
It was about,
was the prefix of the insurance card, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we didn't know anything about insurance. and so we built something that we thought was going to be meaningful to people that were trying to find recovery, people that were struggling to keep their recovery. And we wanted to fill those gaps and make sure it was something that, he and I thought would be meaningful to us at various stages in our own recovery. And so we, you know, we built this sports bar, we renovated a coffee truck, and we had concerts, and, you know, we watched the Super Bowl and had these great events there. And, again, we didn't have a clue how we were going to make money. We just knew what we wanted to do. And I think that to us was the difference, right? That it was just he and I, we just knew what we wanted, and, you know, the results be damned, we were going to do this.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I always say when people ask me, and just, you know, in full disclosure, I think that our listeners already know this, but I'm the founder of BRC Healthcare in Austin, Texas. And I guess, I don't know, maybe a year ago. So now the company is owned by investors now, and I'm, you know, have a small part still, but we were able to acquire Nashville Recovery Center, which, you know, brought Ryan and I even into closer, you know, communion with one another. But, you know, what I was going to say is, what I hear you saying and what I've always done was build to the need, you know, what's needed, what's missing, what's something that I wish I had. That's what you were saying. And I think that, you know, paying attention to, you know, actually what is the need in that particular community setting is really, you know, a vital part that lots of times gets skipped out of fear, out of, you know, trying to plan too much, whatever it is. But it's interesting because you guys were so successful and are so successful, but just talking about NRC.
Yeah. And I agree, Marcia. It was something that, you know, I worked very closely with people that worked at Nashville Recovery Center. Even before we hired them, I would meet with them to talk about our culture, our mission, our values. You know, I was the first one to say, hey, if I hear anyone on the phone talking to a family about how many beds we have or, you know, what insurances we accept, like, it's going to drive me crazy. Like, what we offer is hope. What we offer is the chance to finally, for the first time in some cases, just to be real and come in as you are. you know, and not have this kind of cookie cutter approach to, quote, fixing people.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It just reminded me when you said that. I remember so clearly when I watched, I think it was a YouTube video of you talking about all are welcome. And I remember that I just had tears streaming down my face. It makes me a little emotional to think about it right now because it was just so beautifully stated. I know you can probably say the whole thing, but just to tell the audience just a little bit about, you know, what that was about.
Yeah, we wrote, the first thing we did with Natural Recovery Center was write a welcome statement. And it was the anchor for our work that we did. And it was on a 12-foot banner that we had printed and hung on the wall. So that was the first and only thing you saw when you walked in. And it was basically saying that all are welcome. And whether you're religious or spiritual or an atheist, whether you're gay, whether you're straight, whether you're a man or a woman or old or young, it didn't matter that you're welcome there. Your emotions, your fears, your doubts, your strengths, all of it. And that's really at the end of the day what we're all looking for, I feel, and when we're in the throes of active addiction.
Belonging.
Right? Yeah, it's just not feeling like you fit in. I mean, how many times do we hear that you always feel different? But there's so many of us that feel that way, that you're not alone. And we wanted people to know they're welcome.
Yeah, that was just so moving to me and just really speaks to your heart and just, you know, what you stand for. So tell me, so let's switch gears a little bit. We do have to talk about what you're doing now. So first of all, tell our listeners about Hall of Fame Health, its mission, who it serves, what are you aiming to do with this? And, you know, I guess, how did this idea come to you? You're a true visionary, Ryan. So how did we get into the NFL space?
Well, I could take credit for having these grand plans. I don't. They just kind of fall in my lap. And I feel like just saying yes and exploring every opportunity and seeing, you know, surprise me, God, you know, that's what's been happening. And so a couple of years ago, I was asked to go up to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, where they had begun an initiative called Hall of Fame Health, which was set up to provide healthcare resources for former players and their families. These would be individuals who, you know, maybe played pro football at some point in their career, but weren't vested and didn't have the benefits that many of the famous NFL players have. And a lot of times their families were uncovered. And so they were looking at things like orthopedics and sports medicine and just basic health insurance and trying to connect these former players and their families to these resources. Well, the first 3 or 4 phone calls they got were all about mental health and substance abuse, and it was an area they hadn't even considered. So I went up to Canton, Ohio to listen to what their plans were to address those issues. And I guess at the end of the day, they liked what I had to say and asked me to come back with a business plan for how we might address it formally with the behavioral health program. And in 2021, it got unanimously approved by the Pro Football Hall of Fame board. And here we are. We've got 400 providers and growing nationwide. And these are elite care centers, treatment centers and hospitals and therapists and detox facilities and psychiatric hospitals. So we have, we've been able to really expand this network. And what's really neat about it is these aren't just, you know, dots on a map. These have all been personally vetted by our team. They've been visited on site. So we know the staff, we know the leadership, and it's a way for individuals that are looking for help to know that they can trust the places on this list.
Yeah. And that's so important because I think, you know, a lot of people just feel so lost, you know, whether they're struggling with some issue, whether it's mental health or substance abuse or a family member, you know, and I think people feel lost and maybe they, you know, hop on the internet and that might not have such a good, you know, outcomes, so to speak. But, you know, what I have really been impressed with watching this thing grow is every single person that I've talked to that has been associated with, you know, from, you know, whether it's supporting it, whether they're, you know, one of the elite centers that has signed on or just employees that are working for you, everyone's just so enthusiastic. And it's just been really refreshing that, you know, to feel that energy from them. Like, they know they have a great leader. They know they have a great opportunity. So where do you think all that enthusiasm comes from?
Well, I think it comes from, like I talked about earlier, just the authenticity of it all, right? So we go into this saying, look, we just want to help people. We are in a place where there are, you know, 14,000 treatment centers and sober living places and you name it. And, you know, how do you stand out? Well, the ones that stand out are the ones that know who they are and who they aren't. And what we're doing is building centers that have that same mindset. And, you know, I don't need a center to do it our way to become part of our network. That we want the centers to tell us who they are and where they fit in. And I think our employees are the same, are the same way. I don't need them to, you know, wear a suit or to show up from 8 to 5 every day. Like we really focus on bringing your best version of you, whatever that looks like. And some days we just don't bring it. And I think, you know, by having that attitude, it's almost like, it creates almost like a servant leadership type thing, where everyone in our team is willing to take out the trash. Everyone on our team is willing to take that phone call late at night. And it's contagious.
Right, right. Well, you know, did you just naturally feel comfortable around athletes? Did you grow up playing sports and stuff like that? Because, you know, I've seen some of the pictures on, you know, social media and the internet and stuff, and you look so comfortable and so at home with, you know, pretty famous athletes and, you know, coaches, et cetera. Like, you know, where do you think that comes from?
I think it comes from, I did play sports, and that's, you know, one of the things I had a series of knee injuries that led me to my first, experience with opioids. So I definitely have always loved football and sports and the NFL in particular. And, I think had I done this 10 years ago, it may have been a little more, I might've been more starstruck. Doing it today, you know, having worked with thousands of people and families who, have had mental health issues within their family unit, you quickly learn that everybody has their own story and they're just people. And the quote, famous people that I'm working with today are just people who have been touched by mental health issues within their family unit. And so I'm having the same conversations with them that I'd have with my neighbor or my parents' friends or, you know, someone that's looking for a treatment center. So, you know, we have this rule that's kind of undisclosed. That's basically a no asshole rule. And we don't want to work. We don't want to work with people, whether it's employ them, or vendors that we work with, or even customers that are doing this for the wrong reason. And we almost have a zero tolerance policy. And so these players, every time you see a picture of me and a Hall of Fame player or a former NFL player or a country music artist, like that's not why they're there. They're there supporting the mission of helping people receive mental health and substance use services.
It's like the great connector in a way, because, you know, if you've been through, you know, active addiction or have had a family member that has been through it, or, you know, mental health or co-occurring, you know, it's the type of sort of fear / loneliness that only few know. And, you know, I understand what you're saying, because it's the thing that, you know, connects us, you know, because we all have our own story of the common problem, as they say. And so now it's almost like you guys are locked arms, you know, walking toward a common solution. And that's really empowering for people, I think.
It is. And, you know, one of the missions that we have is to increase awareness of the issues around mental health and substance use, and then reducing the stigma associated with those issues. And it is... we've been given a great opportunity here to make a difference. And, you know, I can say, having run, that nonprofit Fund Recovery for a few years and been involved for almost 10, I've seen firsthand how, if you get the right people into a room, you can really make a difference and raise a lot of money and change a lot of lives. But when you have these celebrity, let's call them endorsements or participants, you know, all of a sudden it gets a lot more people's attention. And again, it's not done to hang out with celebrities. It's done because they have a bigger megaphone.
Right.
And
right.
I think at the end of the day, we can just make a bigger, yes. And we can make such a big impact along with these people's help.
Right. Right. So let's talk about fund recovery for a moment. Can you describe how, you know, those two kind of connected together and, you know, what the future is like? I know that you all just had a big event in Nashville. I was so bummed that I had to miss that. Just talk about that, kind of what's going on right now, because I think a lot of our listeners need and would love to have this information and may even want to become involved in some way.
There are so many ways to get involved. The organization is called Fund Recovery. The website's fundrecovery.org. And it's been around for 11 years. And the purpose of the nonprofit is to give financial assistance for people looking for mental health or substance use services, but they can't afford the cost of that help. So, sometimes that means they have insurance but can't pay their deductible because it's $5,000 or $10,000 cash. Sometimes they have no insurance and no money. And so we basically have given out well over 600 scholarships to date, almost $1.8 million in grants that we've given. And what's really cool about it is that it's for anybody that needs help, anybody that's looking to get anything from therapy to sober living, residential drug and alcohol treatment, mental health services, or even medication or transportation to these programs. So it's a really broad scholarship offering. And what we've done with it is we've negotiated discounted rates with all of our providers so that, you know, they're doing their part. They've got skin in the game because they're willing to do the great work they do at a lower cost for the people that are coming through the fund recovery program. And then we use fund recovery to help make up the difference, and the individual never receives the cash. The money goes directly to the provider for the services rendered.
That's smart too. Might have a few little detours along the way, unfortunately. And talk about the events that are being held too, and is where a schedule can be found and stuff like that.
Yeah, if you go to our website, fundrecovery.org, there's an event page. We've got 7 events remaining this year in cities all over the country. Our first one we had was in Nashville, 2 weeks ago now. And we had 6 or 7 country music artists, Chase Rice, Jimmy Allen, Jesse James Decker, Tyler Ridge.
Wow.
Just a really, really good group of people put on a concert. And then we had several Pro Football Hall of Famers, the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, a lot of former Titans, Eddie George, current players, George Kittle, Ryan Suckup. So we had a lot of celebrities and a very neat auction and silent auction, and raised a lot of money, almost $250,000 for this event. And, you know, that's going to help so many people get treatment.
That's amazing.
Yep.
In one night. Yep. Wow. Good.
In one night. In one night. And we have the next events we have are in Detroit in May, Dallas in June. We have Atlanta at the end of June. Where else? Denver in August, Los Angeles in September. So we've got a lot more coming. And if you just go to the website, you can find a calendar of events.
That's great. And so when you think about the future, and I could talk to you for another hour, Ryan. We're getting close to the end of our time. But when you think about the future for you, for these two organizations, and just for recovery in general, I think a lot about this word stigma, and I talk about this a lot just from different people's perspective. But, you know, what do you think the future is? I mean, do you think that, as a population, we're going to continue to learn more about addiction and, embrace it so that the stigma continues to wane? Or do you think that, that there's going to be sort of a correction and people are going to go back to, trying to punish the addiction out of us or punish the mental health disorders out of us. You know what I mean? What do you think about that? I think about that sometimes. I don't know if I'm weird, but I do think about that.
No, you're right. I think there's two sides to it. I think the one side is that mental health issues are becoming normalized. So when you have people like these Hall of Fame athletes or, you know, at the Olympics with Simone Biles, when people say, hey, I need a break, I'm having a mental health crisis, it's becoming way more acceptable than it ever was in the past. And you used to never hear these things. But you know, people felt these issues and they just bottled it up, you know? And so I think on that side of it, it's becoming more mainstream, which in turn would make it more acceptable for kind of regular everyday people to say, hey, I feel like that too. And so that, I think, is the positive. I think the negative side is that there's always going to be part of the crowd that is attacking, you know, addiction or mental health issues like it's a character issue, like it's a choice that people want to act like that. And if they would just get their act together, then everything would be fine. And you know, I've dealt with stigma for many years personally. I've seen it happen to the people that live at our residences. I had one, Marsha, over the weekend. I got an email from a guy, a neighbor, who there was a series of break-ins into cars on the street where we had one of our houses. And the email said, you know, we don't approve of your kind being in our neighborhood.
Wow.
And these break-ins are a result of us having men and women in recovery living on the street.
Wow. That makes me so angry. I mean, I just have such a response to that. It's heartbreaking, but it's also maddening.
Yep. I agree.
Did you respond? You maybe need to like pause for a couple days before you respond.
I don't know. Maybe I would. It did eat my lunch for a minute, and I, you know, looked the guy up on the internet, and I had all kinds of witty responses, and I realized that like there's nothing he can do about it, and there's nothing I can do about it that's going to change his mind. And what I would say to anyone that deals with it is, you know what, it wouldn't surprise me if someone like that doesn't have a family member who's has a mental health issue or a drug or alcohol problem, and you know, one day they may need to call somebody like
that's
me.
That's right. That's
right. To help them. And I still would help them.
For sure. I mean, that's what we do. And, you know, people, I guess I'm just getting, I don't know, a little mellow in my middle age. But, you know, I've finally decided that no matter how angry I am with something that someone says or does, I think the truth is most people are doing the best that they can with what they have on any given day. And if I can stay in that mindset, it helps me a lot. But when I hear people saying things like you just talked about on that email, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it hits me to my heart. I think that's what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
well, I just think of it, you know, we've been there, Marsha. Like, you know, I probably would have been the guy doing that kind of crazy stuff had it not been for recovery. And it's a sad thing to think about. But again, I think the other side of it is more positive in the fact that, you know, more and more people are normalizing the idea of acknowledging mental health or substance use issues.
Yeah, and I think so also, just even, you know, professionally, I've shared on the podcast before that, you know, when I was going through all my struggles, you know, almost 15 years ago now, I was all tangled up with, you know, the bar associations because I was a practicing attorney at the time. And, you know, they really approached that thing like I was basically a moral failure. And because I didn't know anything about what was wrong with me either, I kind of agreed with them. You know, I mean, I was ashamed of myself, so to speak. And then I really found out about, you know, the disease model and, you know, all the brain's effect, all the different things that we now know. But, you know, what's interesting is I have in my recovery been asked to come back and speak for a few different Bar Association events. And it's just been such a full circle moment, because not only have I changed, you know, obviously my behavior has changed and everything, but my awareness has shifted and so has theirs. So for them to invite me back and for me to be, you know, sort of a voice of experience and, you know, hope for people that are still struggling, and the people that work with them, that's been really rewarding to me. And it makes me think that, you know, we all can change, you know, we all can and do change, I think. Anyway, well, Ryan, you are one of my favorite people. I just, you know, I'm just so grateful for everything that, you know, that we've done together and we'll do together in the future. And thank you for coming on the podcast. And, you know, just congratulations on everything that you're doing. You're impacting thousands and thousands of lives. And that's really powerful. So you have a lot to be proud of.
Well, thank you, Marcia. And thank you for letting me be on your podcast today. And I'm sorry I didn't get to talk to Erica, but I will soon.
No, yeah, she's a doll. So we do have what we call the deep dive question that we always ask our guest at the end of the show. Can you go there with me?
Sure.
Great. So the deep dive question is, Ryan Kane, what is your superpower?
Oh, my superpower. I would think my superpower would be empathy.
I love that.
Yeah.
Tell me why you said that.
I can go deeper. I think I had a very profound experience one day. I've done a lot of individual workshops and groups and things over the years, and there was one in particular I remember that kind of struck me. And it was a group of about 50 men, and we were sitting in a giant circle and kind of sharing some very vulnerable things about growing up. And one person kind of opened up and said that they had been molested as a child. And I remember looking at that person and feeling so sorry for them. And a couple other people went, and one of the men shared that he had actually molested a young boy at some point in his life. And I remember looking at him so different, and I wanted to wring his neck. And I was like, how dare that person? And, you know, how can you live with yourself? I was just all the feelings. And we went around a couple times, and it went back to that guy who had admitted molesting someone. And then he said, he broke down and said, I was molested weekly for almost 10 years. And I thought, I just looked at him so differently after that. And I realized that how quick we are to just jump on someone, like we smell blood and we just go after them. And we don't take the time to really understand what's been going on. And it's something that's really stuck with me over the years. And I think it helps me to relate to more people, because I can always try to lean in more when I feel something where I'm like instantly repelled. I want to know why am I repelled, and why can't I lean into this person? And so I think maybe that might be my superpower.
I love that. I love that answer. And, you know, I'm just so grateful to have you in my life, Ryan, and to be able to call you a friend. It makes me feel really proud. So, oh my gosh. Well, thank you again. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for another episode of Rewiring Your Life. I'm Marcia Stone, and until next week, be well.